I'd been trying so hard to hold back, to keep my feelings from showing. Hell, I barely knew what all those feelings meant. But I'd cracked. Despite the way I wanted her, the primal urge I'd been fighting to rip her clothes off, once I'd touched her, all that animalistic lust had taken a back seat. I'd never experienced anything like it. I'd kissed her, but carefully, like if I made one wrong move, she'd disappear. And it had felt better than any kiss, better than anything I'd had with a woman before. Sex was great. I enjoyed it as much as the next guy, but somehow kissing and holding her like that had been better. It was really fucking with my head. Because there was one thing that would explain what had happened to me today. One single reason that a simple kiss and a woman in my arms would have rocked my world like this, and it scared the living shit out of me to even think it. I didn't do love. I wasn't cut out for it. I loved my family, even if I was terrible at showing it, but romantic love, relationships, commitment, that wasn't for me. My mama had made Scarlett promise she wouldn't get married until she was 30. She'd made us boys promise we wouldn't get married for any reason except one, only if we were stupid in love. She'd emphasized the word stupid. I hadn't kept that promise because I felt obligated, like my sister. I'd kept it because it made damn good sense. People like Harlan and Nadine Tucker, happily married after so many years, seemed like the exception. My parents were the rule. Two people stuck together by circumstances they couldn't control, making each other miserable. Maybe that was where the stupid came in, because when I thought about Callie, it was hard to see a future of resentment and regret. In fact, I realized as I lay there, if I let her go, that might become the biggest regret of my life. I was well and truly fucked. That was all there was to it. She hadn't been here that long, and she'd already turned me inside out. But when I thought about it, I'd always loved her a little bit. All those years ago, I hadn't looked at her like a girl I wanted. She'd been young and sweet and innocent. Older or not, I'd been all wrong for her as a boyfriend. Still was. But as a friend, we'd shared something special. That was how I'd loved her, with music, with songs and harmonies, and the sound of my guitar. The bedroom door whispered open. It was dark, but I could see Callie's outline as she padded down the hallway. She hardly made a sound, turning the corner into the kitchen. Without really thinking about what I was doing, or the fact that I wasn't wearing anything except underwear, I tossed the blanket aside and got up. I found her at the sink, filling up a glass of water in the dark. "You all right?" I whispered. She turned around, still holding her glass, and even in the dim light, I could see she wasn't.
"No."
I took the glass and set it on the counter, then brushed her hair back from her face.
"What's wrong?"
Her voice shook.
"I woke up after a bad dream, and now I can't calm down. I keep remembering things, but they're all confusing flashes. It's like suddenly my brain wants to replay all the worst moments of my life, but none of them make sense."
Slipping my hands around her waist, I drew her close, kissed her forehead. "Nothing can hurt you here. I won't let anything happen to you." She leaned on my bare chest, and I hugged her against me. I had no idea what I was doing. Comforting someone wasn't exactly in my skill set, but this seemed simple enough. Wrap my arms around her and hold her tight. The best part was, it felt really fucking good. There was so much happening inside me. My chest felt warm and full, like I might burst. Her hair smelled like heaven, and the feel of her in my arms was so right. Perfect, even, like the roads we'd both taken had always been leading to this. Was this what love felt like? A rush of euphoria and affection mixed with a healthy dose of terror? Had my brothers been through this? I'd never bothered to ask, hadn't thought it would apply to me. Callie wound her arms around my waist, her body trembling. I rested my cheek against her head and rubbed slow circles across her back. Right now, in this moment, I wanted nothing more than to make her feel better, to make things okay again. "Let's go back to bed," I whispered.
"I don't want to be alone."
I kissed the top of her head. "Don't worry, I've got you." With an arm around her, I led her back to my bedroom. She crawled into bed, and I slid beneath the covers beside her, gathered her in my arms so she could rest her head on my chest. I took slow breaths, feeling her body gradually relax. She stopped shivering, her arm draped across my rib cage, and she tucked her leg over mine, nestling in closer. I traced my thumb over her soft skin and breathed her in as she sank into me. I hated that she was scared, that her father had hurt her so badly, the pain echoed in her dreams even now. But holding her like this, warm and comfortable in my bed, felt so good, I couldn't help but smile. That was something I didn't do very often.
"Gibson?"
she whispered.
"Yeah." "Thank you."
I squeezed her tighter. "Feel better?"
"So much better."
"Good." I kissed her head again. She was quiet for a long moment, and I wondered if she'd fallen asleep.
"Everything is different now, isn't it?"
"Yeah, it is."
"Does that scare you?"
I thought about it for a beat. It did scare me. Didn't seem like there was any reason to keep that from her.
"Little bit. You?"
She nodded, her head moving against my chest.
"Little bit."
Oddly, that seemed like a good sign. I didn't know what I was doing or where this was headed, but at least we were on the same page.
"Do you think you can sleep now?"
I asked.
"Will you stay with me?"
I squeezed her again. "I'm not going anywhere."
"Good."
The last of the tension seemed to melt from her body, her limbs going languid. I closed my eyes, drifting in the warmth of her skin, the feel of her soft breathing, and I couldn't remember the last time I'd felt so at peace. Chapter 23. Gibson. The smell of paint filled the air in the Bootleg Springs High School gym. Jonah and Jameson were each on a tall ladder, rolling on a coat of light blue and a band across the wall. Bowie, Devlin, and I were working on the dark blue at the bottom. Painting the old high school gym. Oh, the things I did for my brother. At least we were just doing the stripes, not the entire walls. Cash was at home. I'd spent the last few days building a fence around a good portion of the yard, right off the back porch. He had room to run, a bed on the porch to sleep on, food and water. The weather was nice, so he was a happy little guy, and we could let him run free without worrying about him taking off.
"I thought you said George was coming,"
Jameson called down from his perch above my head.
"It should be his tall ass up here."
"I thought he was,"
Bowie said.
"I texted him, but he hasn't answered."
"He better show up," Jameson said. "It ain't like we can toss him in the lake again if he doesn't."
I chuckled a little at that. George was too big for us to throw in the lake, even if we all took a limb. The guy could hold his liquor, too. It had taken an impressive amount of moonshine to get him drunk. But that trebuchet toss had become the stuff of legend.
"He'll show,"
Jonas said. My phone buzzed, so I wiped a smear of paint on my jeans and took it out of my pocket. I had a text from Callie. She'd sent me a picture of herself wearing a fluffy white bathrobe. She was at the spa with the girls while the rest of us helped Bowie paint the gym. Ordinarily, I'd have grumbled about that. We were busting our asses to help Bowie out, and they go to get massages and manicures and shit. But I loved seeing Callie having fun, even if I was stuck here with these shitheads. She'd been skittish about coming into town for a few days, but I'd spread the word about that Lee Williams prick to my family, and they'd been keeping an eye out. No sightings of him, so we figured he'd left town. Probably just been here that day. No one else remembered seeing him. I didn't for a second think we could let our guard down, but she was with Scarlett today, so I wasn't worried. My sister was a force to be reckoned with. All things considered, I was in a decent mood. Sleep helped. I'd spent the last week sleeping in my own bed again. My couch wasn't bad, but this was better, especially because Callie was in there with me. She snuggled up to me every night, and I fell asleep to the feel of her breathing. It was pretty fucking great. Maya was still my girlfriend in public, and we acted every bit the couple. I'd even planted a kiss on her lips right in front of Mert Crabapple and old Jefferson Waverly outside the brunch club yesterday. In private, when she was Callie, was where things were getting real. Instead of keeping my distance, I held her closer, kissed her more, slept cuddled in bed with her, woke to her scent and usually her long hair in my face. That was pretty fucking great, too. Even her hair. I dipped the roller in the paint and rolled it on the wall, leaving a wide streak of dark blue.
"How's progress on the house?"
Bowie asked, glancing at Devlin. Even in an old Cockspurs t-shirt and paint-splattered shorts, Devlin looked like a suit. He and my sister were such a mismatched couple, but he made her happy, and he treated her like gold. She loved him, so that was good enough for me. Dev was on my short list of people I actually liked.
"Walls are going up on the second floor,"
Devlin said.
"It's starting to look like a house. How's married life treating you?"
"Best thing ever,"
Bowie said, rolling more paint on the wall. Weird shit was happening. Bowie was married, Jameson was planning a wedding, the only reason Scarlett lacked a ring on her finger was her stubborn insistence on keeping her promise to Mom, she and Dev were building their dream home together, even Jonah had given up the bachelor life for Shelby. A few weeks ago, I'd have left them all to their funerals. Get hitched and tie myself to a woman? Hell no. Why would anyone go and do a thing like that? It was crazy how fast a man's perspective could change. Less than 3 weeks. That's how long it had been since I'd opened my front door to find Callie Kendall standing there. Less than 3 weeks since she jumped into my arms and sent my entire world into a tailspin. That wasn't enough time to know anything, was it? Not enough time to fall in love, even if I had known her before. When I thought about it like that, it seemed crazy. My problem was, I had no idea what love actually felt like. Maybe I was still riding the high of seeing her again, or having her reappear when I thought she was gone forever. But that kiss, I could still feel it. The way her lips had pressed against mine, her arms draped around my neck. I'd kissed her plenty of times since then, but that was all we'd done, like we were a new couple getting to know each other, not wanting to rush it. Was that normal? I had no idea what I was doing.
"Gibbs?"
Bowie asked. I startled, realizing I'd been staring at the wall with the roller and the paint tray. Shit.
"You all right?"
he asked. Yeah, fine. I rolled off the excess paint and got out of his way.
You sure?
He asked. Everything okay with Maya? I rolled the paint on the wall, stalling for time. Damn it, I didn't want to talk about this, but I also wanted to know. I was flying blind, and I hated that more than I hated talking about shit, even feelings. She's good. I set the roller on the edge of the tray and cleared my throat. Things are, you know, not as pretend anymore. Everyone stopped painting and looked at me. Shut your fucking faces, I snapped. It's not a big deal. Bowie grinned.
Well, holy shit. The final Bodine bites the dust.
It ain't all that, I said. She's only been back a few weeks, and I don't know how long she's staying.
Yeah, but this isn't just any girl, he said. Y'all were friends before, and it doesn't seem like 13 years did much to change that.
I grunted my agreement. Jameson climbed down the ladder.
It's pretty cool, Gibbs.
I rubbed the back of my neck. Yeah, but I have no idea what I'm doing. Weren't you the one giving George relationship advice when he got in a fight with June that one time? Jonah asked. That's different.
Why?
Jonah asked, sounding amused. Because it wasn't me. Jameson handed me a bottle of water, then passed a beer to everyone else. Apparently, it was break time. They got comfortable, sitting on stools or the floor, and cracked open their beers while I took a sip of water. Jameson ripped open a package of cookies. I like her, okay? I said finally. I like her a lot. I might even... Shit. But how the hell do you know?
How do you know? Bowie asked, repeating my question. You can't stop thinking about her.
You want to be with her all the time, Jameson added. And you'd do just about anything to keep her. Devlin sat on a stool and rested his elbows on his knees.
She makes you feel alive.
Yep, Jonah said. And her being happy makes you happy. I took another drink. Okay, if all that's true, then what?
Then you date her, Devlin said. Spend time with her and see where it goes. Basically what you're already doing,
Bowie said.
Have you had the talk?
What talk?
If you don't know, you probably haven't,
Bowie said.
The talk about where things stand, if you're officially a couple.
Girls like to put a label on it, Jameson said.
Jameson's very sensitive, so he needed a label on it before Leah May did,
Bowie said with a smirk. Jameson glared at him.
Gee, Bo, how many decades did it take before you finally told Cass you were in love with her? It was complicated,
Bowie said. Don't listen to this guy, Jameson said, gesturing at Bowie.
Take it from me. If you see an opportunity, you gotta take it. Just maybe don't leave your truck running in the middle of the street so you can jump out and kiss her, Jonah said. I stand by that, Jameson said. Best decision of my life.
I was actually proud of Jame for that one. I gave him a chin tip.
Just be honest, Devlin said. If you have feelings for her, tell her.
Maybe it's too soon, I said. And it ain't like she lives here permanently.
Jesus, Gibbs, tell her,
Jameson said.
Trust me on this one. I didn't speak up when I should have, and I almost lost Leah May because of it.
We all went silent, and I stared at the floor for a long moment. The way they put it, it didn't seem all that complicated. It wasn't like I was thinking about marrying her. Yet,
Maybe this was just how real relationships happened. The silence went on long enough to get awkward. I cleared my throat again. Get back to work, lazy asses. I don't want to be here all day. Devlin took his beer back to the spot he'd been painting, and Jonah started climbing one of the ladders. Bowie shook his head at me with a little grin on his face. Kind of made me want to punch him, but not too hard. Jameson patted my shoulder. She likes you too, Gibbs. I'd bet my poker money on it. Thanks. Now shut your pie hole about it. He slapped me on the back, then went back to work.
Hey, guys, George said from the doorway. He came in dressed in an old t-shirt and torn jeans. Sorry I'm late.
What the hell happened to you?
George looked a little rough. His hair was a mess, his beard hadn't been trimmed in a while, and he had dark circles under his eyes.
It's June, he said. She's killing me.
Killing you how?
Bowie asked.
I don't know what's gotten into her, George said. She's insatiable lately. I'm talking multiple times a day, like meals and snacks, only sex. She woke me up in the middle of the night last night and, well, I won't go into detail, but suffice it to say, it was pretty great, but I'm exhausted. I haven't had a full night's sleep in a week.
Slow your roll, George,
Bowie said, wincing.
Hearing about June is like hearing about our sister.
You better get some rest tonight, Jonah called down. We have an 8-miler tomorrow.
Ah, shit, George said. He grabbed a paint roller.
What's new with you guys?
Gibson has feelings,
Jameson said. Everyone laughed, including George.
Go ahead, shitheads. Laugh all you want, I said. Next Cockspurs game, y'all are gonna have to get your drunk asses on the bus to get home by yourself.
We all got back to work, and a couple of hours later, we'd finished. Place didn't look half bad with some new paint. Just as we were done cleaning up, the girls arrived, fresh from their spa day. Each of them, including June, darted for their significant others, jumping into their arms. Callie looked a little shy as she walked toward me, her tongue darting to the notch in her lip. Hey, you. I slipped my hands around her waist and drew her close. Have a good time?
Yeah, it was nice.
I leaned in to kiss her, just a taste, but then kissed her again because it felt so damn good.
I like it when you do that,
she whispered, brushing her nose against mine. That's good. I like doing it. Her lips were so delicious and so close, I decided I didn't care that my sister was probably staring at us and kissed her again. Scarlett knew I didn't have to do this here. We were all in on the truth, so kissing Callie now wasn't for show. I pulled back and looked her in the eyes, ignoring everyone else. Ready?
Sure.
Her phone rang and she pulled it out of her bag.
Hang on a second, I should take this.
I nodded. She held the phone up to her ear.
Hey, Cole, are you still in the studio? How's it going?
Bowie caught my eye and whispered,
Cole? She isn't talking to Cole Bryson, is she?
I shrugged. Cole Bryson was a big deal, famous rock star with millions of rabid fans.
Yeah, I know it's hard,
she said, her voice soothing.
But you need to remember, you've done this before. Look at those platinum records on the wall. You've totally got this.
Holy shit, maybe it was Cole Bryson. She paused again, listening, and her posture changed. Crossing her arms, she widened her stance.
All right, Cole. I get it, but if the album doesn't feel right, is wallowing in self-pity going to fix it? No, it's not. The only thing that's going to fix it is you.
So here's what you're going to do. You're going to peel yourself off the floor, grab that guitar, and get your ass to work.
I raised my eyebrows. She sounded like a coach giving her team a fourth quarter locker room pep talk.
No more excuses, she said, her voice firm. I'm serious. Quit being a pansy. You're tougher than this. If I have to fly out there to babysit you in the studio, you're not going to like it. I will ride your ass day and night until you get that motherfucking album done.
Everyone stared at her, including me. She made me want to quit being a pansy. About what, I had no idea, but her tone didn't leave any room for argument. She smiled, and when she spoke again, she was all sugar.
That's what I like to hear. It's going to be amazing. I have faith in you, okay? We'll talk soon.
With a satisfied breath, she put her phone away.
Sorry about that.
I stared at her in awe. She'd gone from sweetheart to hard-ass take-no-shit woman and back again in the blink of an eye. I was a fucking goner for this girl.
Dang, you told him,
Scarlett said. Callie just smiled and slipped her hand in mine.
Shall we?
Yes, ma'am. No one said anything, but all eyes were on us, or maybe just her, while we walked out. We left the high school and drove back to my place. I thought about what my brothers had said. We hadn't talked. I didn't know where this was going, if anywhere, and the weirdest thing was, I wanted to know. I cared, a lot. And I hadn't cared about anything this much in a long fucking time. I parked in front of my house and we both got out. Before we went inside, I stopped in front of my truck and cupped her face in my hands, kissed her deeply this time.
What was that for?
She asked.
I like you.
I wasn't ready to start saying the other word, even if I'd thought it a few times. I know you haven't been here long, and we aren't sure what's going to happen, but this means something to me. I want you to know that. A slow smile parted her lips.
This means something to me, too.
There was that full feeling in my chest again. So we see where this leads?
Yeah, we see where this leads.
I leaned in to kiss her again, but the crunch of tires coming down my driveway interrupted us. Instinctively, I put myself between Callie and the car, gently nudging her behind me. A compact maroon two-door with a dent in the bumper on the driver's side pulled to a stop. A big guy with a dark beard got out and walked toward us.
Are you Gibson Bodine?
Yeah, who's asking? He held out a manila envelope.
This is for you.
I took the envelope and watched him like a hawk while he got back into his car and turned around. Didn't stop watching until he'd driven out of sight.
That was weird,
Callie said. Yeah, it was. The envelope had my name on the outside, typed on a white label, but nothing else. I ripped it open and pulled out a thick bundle of paperwork.
What is it?
Callie asked. I skimmed the first page, my brow furrowing as I read. It's a lawsuit, I said. A wrongful death suit in the case of Callie Kendall. Your parents are suing my family.
Chapter 24, Maya. The tension in Bowie and Cassidy's living room was thick as mud. One of their cats had disappeared at the first sign of company. The other, a fat orange guy, hadn't moved from his spot, curled up on a pillow. Jameson stood against the wall with his arms crossed, staring down at the floor. Leah May sat on the arm of a chair next to him, casting worried glances his way. Jonah had an arm around Shelby, his muscles bulging, the veins in his arms standing out. Cassidy sat on the couch next to Bowie, rubbing circles across his back. She had her laptop open in front of her. Bowie leaned forward, elbows on his knees, reading his copy of the lawsuit. Gibson alternated between standing with crossed arms and pacing. His jaw clenched tight, making the cords in his neck pop, and his face was dark with anger. He and I had read through the paperwork back at his place. His father's estate was being sued, and he and his siblings were all named. There were parts of the legalese I didn't understand, but the bottom line was clear. The Kendalls were suing Jonah Bodine's estate and its heirs for my supposed death. It hadn't taken long for the phone calls to start flying. The other Bodines had all been served. Bowie had told everyone to meet at his place. We were just waiting on Scarlett. She burst in the front door like a tiny whirlwind. "What the actual fuck is happening right now? Can you believe this?" Devlin was right behind her and put calming hands on her shoulders. "It's okay. No one needs to panic." "Don't panic. Do you hear yourself? The stupid Kendalls are suing us for a death that ain't even happened." "Can I do this?" Jameson asked. "Legally speaking, yes," Devlin said. "Now that they supposedly have a body, she's no longer considered missing. She's dead." "So they're suing the estate?" Jonah asked. "Let's forget for a second that Callie isn't dead. They can't have enough proof to implicate him."
"Do they know something we don't?" Shelby asked.
"Not necessarily," Devlin said. "This isn't my specialty, but I read over the complaint. It alleges that Jonah Sr. aided Callie's disappearance and either failed to prevent or was complicit in her death. The burden of proof in a civil suit like this isn't the same as a criminal trial. They don't have to prove he did it to win."
"And think about it," Bowie said, ticking points off on his fingers.
"There's the sweater, Callie's fingerprints in Mom's car, Dad's speeding ticket in New York, putting him near the location of that body. And they aren't alleging he killed her," Devlin said, "which means they don't have to prove that he did. Essentially, they're alleging he helped her run away, and as a result of that, she died, putting him at fault."
"It fits with their story that she had mental issues," Cassidy said, then glanced at me.
"Sorry, I don't mean to talk like you aren't here. My point is, they've always claimed you were depressed and unstable. Adding that you were a runaway means they don't have to change their story. It all sounds plausible."
I nodded at Cassidy. She was right, but my shoulders pinched with tension. Their story had clearly been designed to paint me as the problem and them as the poor victims of a depressed teenager. It made me sick.
"What's their game?" Bowie asked, and I wasn't sure if he was talking to himself or expecting an answer.
"Are they trying to force her out of hiding?" Jameson asked.
"I don't think so," Devlin said. He squeezed Scarlett's shoulders and stepped around her. "I know we don't have proof, but if they're behind all those incidents, the forensics report, Shelby's attack, intimidating that retired teacher, even Abby Gilbert's death, they're trying very hard to make sure the truth doesn't come out. They want her to stay dead."
"So why sue us?" Gibson growled.
"This is just my opinion," Devlin said. "But I think it's an intimidation tactic. I don't know if their case is strong enough to win, but I doubt they care. A lawsuit could bury all of you in legal fees, not to mention stress, for the foreseeable future. If they have deep enough pockets, they won't think twice about getting you all tangled up in the legal system."
"I think he's right," Cassidy said. "I think they realize things are happening, and there's a chance the truth about Callie will come out. They're trying to keep y'all from digging."
"It wouldn't surprise me if at least one of you gets a call from their lawyer or someone who represents them," Devlin said. "I bet they try to get you to do something in exchange for dropping the lawsuit."
"Something like what?" Bowie asked.
Probably a public statement confirming their story, Devlin said. It would be a PR stunt, something to make them look gracious and forgiving and get you all on record saying their story is true. Or I could be wrong and they just want to ruin your lives by emptying your bank accounts.
I raised my hand like a kid in a classroom. Can I say something? Heads turned in my direction. This isn't really a problem. I'm not dead. I'm sitting right here. So all I have to do is come forward, prove my identity, and this lawsuit goes away. Gibson stopped moving and stood, his posture defensive.
Hold on.
I put up a hand. I know you're worried about what will happen when the Kendalls find out I'm here. I am too. I won't lie, I'm scared. But I can't let y'all get sued.
I'm with Gibson, Jonah said. We need to think this through and remember who we're dealing with.
Gibson tipped his chin to him.
This is some messed up shit, Bowie said, pushing the papers away. But y'all are right. We have to think about what the judge will do if his dead daughter suddenly reappears.
We have time, Devlin said, and the professionalism in his tone was calming.
You have 30 days to respond, and then the courts move slowly.
But y'all are still going to have to pay your lawyer to file a response and start fighting this, I said, only half aware of the y'alls I was suddenly dropping.
Don't worry about that, Gibson said. I'll cover it.
We'll all cover it, like we've been doing, Bowie said.
Speaking of, has anyone called Jamie?
Jonah asked.
I did, Bowie said. I sent her a scanned copy. We're supposed to call her. Are we telling her about Callie? Because I really think we have to.
Gibson met my eyes and I gave him a short nod. Yes, tell her, I said. Everyone else nodded and murmured their assent. Bowie tapped his phone screen, then set it on the coffee table.
Bodine's, Jamie said. Before you say anything, don't panic.
Devlin nodded his agreement.
No one's panicking, Bowie said. Mostly.
Is everyone there? Jamie asked.
Yes, ma'am. And Devlin filled us in a bit on what this means.
Good, she said, her tone clipped. They don't have a strong case, but they don't necessarily need one. I don't think they care if they win. They're trying to put the blame for Callie's death as far from their doorstep as possible. This is a good way to do it.
We're also wondering if this is an intimidation tactic, Bowie said. Someone showed up in town and approached Gibson. Asked him about why he'd been taken in to talk to the sheriff. Seems like that could point back to the judge.
Why am I just hearing about this now?
There's been a lot going on,
Bowie said, casting a wary glance around.
There's another rather important development you need to know about. We know Callie's not dead.
That's not new, Jamie said.
That's not what I mean, Bowie said. She's here.
The phone went silent for a few seconds.
Excuse me?
Callie's here, Bowie said. In this room, right now.
Are you fucking kidding me? Jamie said. Jesus, get me her DNA.
Already working on it, Bowie said.
Good. And for fuck's sake, tell me you're all being smart and hiding her in a closet or something.
Gibson raised his eyebrows at me as if to say, see?
She's been living under a new identity, so that's what we've been going with, Bowie said.
Okay, I'll believe it's her when we get her DNA results. Now the judge is gearing up for his confirmation hearing, so we're walking on a very thin wire. He has a lot to lose. If you really have his daughter sitting there, it obviously helps answer a hell of a lot of questions. But without hard evidence, we still can't nail him for anything.
That about sums it up, Bowie said.
We're trying to track down the lab tech who confirmed the dental match on the body in New York, but so far no luck, just voicemail.
What about Abby Gilbert's supposed accident?
Jonah asked. A shudder ran down my spine.
Dead end, Jamie said. Late night hit and run with no witnesses. If you want to hire a PI to dig deeper, be my guest. But I don't think you're likely to find anything. And you need to remember my job is to represent your family, not prosecute the judge. There's only so much I can do.
Understood. So you don't think we can prove the judge was involved in Abby's death?
Jonah asked. I nervously tongued the notch in my lip. My stomach was starting to feel queasy.
Not without something other than what we have, Jamie said. Tell me about the guy asking questions about Gibson. What was that about?
Gibson cleared his throat.
He approached me in town. Said some weird stuff about small towns and gossip and not letting go of the past. He asked if everyone in town was being questioned again or just me. Then he said something vaguely threatening about the world being dangerous and that some things are meant to stay buried.
Did he know who you were?
Yeah, knew my name. I didn't give it to him. I'm also pretty sure he was armed.
Hearing that again made me shiver. The thought of being face to face with Lee Williams again was terrifying. I'd had nightmares about him when I was little.
Fucking fantastic, Jamie muttered.
Callie thinks she knows him, Gibson said. A guy by the name of Lee Williams. Worked for her father.
I've been doing some research, Cassidy said, turning her laptop toward Gibson. It's a common name, but I found someone that might fit. Is this him?
Gibson peered at her screen.
That's him.
Cassidy picked up her laptop and held it so I could see the screen.
Recognize him?
My breath caught in my throat, and the box in my mind rattled violently. It was an older photo, something that had been printed in a newspaper, but it was definitely him.
Yes, he worked for my father.
Forward that to me, Jamie said.
Doing it right now, Cassidy said,
moving her laptop back in front of her.
This guy is sketchy as all get out. Started as a cop about 25 years ago, but left the force after an investigation. Can't find much about it. If I didn't know better, I'd wonder if there was a cover-up.
My father kept him out of jail, I said. It felt like sorting through file folders, old memories that had been tucked away.
I'm not sure what he did. I was too young to understand it all at the time, but I know he did something and got fired. He went to work for my dad after that. I must have been 11, so that would have been about 18 years ago.
That matches up with when he left the police force, Cassidy said. But I've done some searching and I can't find anything that ties him to the judge.
There might not be any direct connections, Jamie said. We'll need to look into the Kendall's lawyer and other people closely associated with the judge. We might be able to tie this guy to the judge through one of them, and we need that link. We could use it to show harassment, especially because he made threatening statements.
On it, Cassidy said, already typing.
Alleged Callie, is there anything else you can give us on this guy?
Jamie asked. I didn't sense any malice in her tone. She just wanted proof before she believed me.
My father used to meet with him in secret. Our house in Virginia had an alarm system with video surveillance. When certain people came over, he'd turn it off. Lee Williams was one of them.
It was a clear memory. If the cameras were turned off, I knew to stay away. Hearing things got me into trouble.
Make me a list of the rest of those cameras off people, Jamie said.
Okay, sure. I'll try.
And I take it you rode in Connie Bodine's car, Jamie said. Alleged Callie's story explains the fingerprints.
The fingerprints, the sweater, and the New York speeding ticket, Bowie said. He helped her escape.
Abuse? She asked.
Yes, Bowie said.
Cassidy reached over to squeeze my hand, and Scarlett sidled up next to me. She put her arm around my shoulders and gave me a reassuring hug.
Well, Jamie said, and I imagined her crossing things off a list. Since the forensic results on Connie's car were inconclusive, we're probably not going to find anything to tie her death to the judge, and...
Jamie kept talking, but everything went fuzzy, especially her voice. I couldn't hear a word because she'd just said, tie her death to the judge.
Connie Bodine's death?
I stared straight ahead, unseeing. I'd known Connie had passed away, but Jamie was saying my father might have been involved. Oh, God. Had my father arranged to have Gibson's mother killed? The room slowly came back into focus. Jamie was still on the phone. Scarlett stood next to me, gently rubbing my back, but her attention was on the call. Jameson and Leah May listened quietly, as did Jonah and Shelby. Devlin was taking notes. Cassidy typed and clicked, searching for evidence and answers. Bowie spoke again, gesturing with his hands, but I couldn't make sense of what anyone was saying. Gibson still paced, his path taking him toward the window and back again. He stopped, and our eyes met. I looked away, feeling like my chest was going to explode with grief and guilt. The pain of it smashed my lungs, making it hard to breathe. How many lives had been ruined? Jonah Bodine had risked everything to help a hurt little girl, and his wife might have been killed for it. Had four kids lost their mom because of me? An entire town had spent over a decade holding on to hope for me, grieving me as a loss. And where had I been? At an off-grid farm in a hippie town, doing yoga and drinking wheatgrass smoothies. In recording studios, backstage at concerts, flying around the world, living in hotels. I think we're done for now, Jamie said. But for God's sake, get me her DNA. Conversations rose around me, everyone rehashing, planning, venting their frustrations. It all blew past me like a strong breeze. Jamie's words replayed in my head over and over. Tie her death to the judge. Why hadn't anyone told me? Someone took my hand and pulled me forward. Gibson. He spoke soft words I couldn't hear through the blood roaring in my ears, but I let him lead me into the kitchen. He touched my face, brushing my hair back. His thumb traced my bottom lip.
Callie, honey, where you at? What's wrong?
I lifted my gaze to meet his. He had your mom killed? His eyes went stormy, worry lines creasing his forehead.
We don't know.
But it's possible. As if reluctant, he nodded slowly.
The last place she went before she died was a hotel in Baltimore. Your mother was there that day at a charity lunch. We can't come up with another reason she would have gone out there other than to see your mom. We always thought she'd been in an accident on the way home, but it might not have been an accident.
I covered my mouth, my stomach roiling. Oh, my God. He put his hands on my arms.
If he did, it ain't your fault.
How can you say that? I asked. How can you even look at me? I left. I abandoned everyone, and look at what happened.
Jesus, Callie, you were 16, he said. You didn't abandon anyone. You got away so you could live.
Why didn't you tell me about your mom?
Fuck, I don't know. Because we don't know for sure. Because there's nothing we can do about it without proof.
Connie Bodine. I remembered her calloused hands bandaging my wounds, her authoritative voice as she and Jonah patched me up and tried to make me comfortable for the night. Gibson, I'm so sorry. My voice broke and tears stung my eyes.
Don't.
He cupped my face.
It's not your fault.
Taking a deep breath, I straightened my spine and sniffed back the tears. Looking into Gibson's stormy blue eyes, a sense of resolve filled me, pushing away the guilt. I want to take them down, Gibbs. We have to find a way.
We will.
His voice was hard.
We're going to end this, and we're going to do it together.
Chapter 25. Maya. The Bodines had decided there was only one thing to do in the wake of this new crisis: eat our weight in comfort food and go drink at the lookout. I hopped out of Gibson's truck, feeling a little sleepy after such a big meal. We'd gone home to check on Cash and play with him a little before heading back to Moonshine for dinner. I'd devoured most of a huge pepperoni roll, and I had zero regrets. Gibson walked around the front of his pickup, dressed in jeans and a dark t-shirt. He gave me a lazy smile, then draped his arm around my shoulders. Even though the lawsuit was stressing everyone out, Gibson had seemed relaxed since our meeting with his family. Those edges of his weren't nearly so rough. I was starting to feel like I had my old Gibson back. "Can I tell you something that's a little bit silly?" I asked.
"Sure."
"I used to daydream about my first time going to the lookout."
"You've never been here before, have you?"
I shook my head. "Nope. I was too young." We started for the door, his arm still around me.
"What's silly about that?"
"This was kind of my daydream," I said, feeling a little sheepish. "Walking in here with you."
"You thought about that back then?"
I reached up and twined my fingers through his. Yeah. I might have had a bit of a crush on you." He paused and looked down at me, one corner of his mouth hooking in a grin.
"You did?
Come on, Gibbs. You were the sexy, intimidating older guy. And you can sing. Of course I had a little crush."
"And all this time I thought you liked how I played guitar."
"Look who has a sense of humor all of a sudden," I said, nudging him with my hip. "A crush wasn't why I liked hanging out with you. I just indulged in a little daydream once in a while."
"Imagine that. Me making a teenage girl's dream come true."
He grabbed the door handle. I looked up at him. "I'm not a teenager anymore." His brow furrowed and heat smoldered in his eyes. With a low rumble in his throat, he looked me up and down, a predator sizing up his prey. My body responded to his fire, a tingle rushing straight to my core. For a heartbeat, I wondered if he'd turn us around, put me in his truck, and drive us back to his place. Instead, he opened the door. Noise spilled out into the warm night, and I stepped into the once-forbidden realm of whiskey and moonshine. The lights were dim, the air just shy of stuffy. Most of the stools around the L-shaped bar were taken, a lot of the tables, too. There were pool tables, neon beer signs, and peanut shells on the floor. Country music mixed with the din of a dozen conversations. I'd been in countless bars before, but never this bar. Never the bar in my girlish fantasies. I'd forgotten about those daydreams, boxed them up with all things Callie. And now here I was, with Gibson Bodine's arm around my shoulders. I hadn't planned for any of this. Coming back to Bootleg, reconnecting with my past, I certainly hadn't planned to fall hard for Gibson Bodine. But falling for him was exactly what was happening. There was no denying it. The moment he'd kissed me, my entire world had changed. Truth was, that kiss had been a long time coming. It wasn't like he was a man I'd just met. We had a history, even if it hadn't been romantic, a history that had already primed my heart for him. We said we'd see where this led, and that felt right. But there was a part of me that already knew exactly where this led, right here, to Bootleg Springs. It led to a tiny four-letter word, something I'd never considered in any place I'd been in the last 13 years. A word I'd thought didn't apply to me. Stay. I wasn't ready to make a decision tonight, or even soon. I felt like we were on the brink of a confrontation that could alter the course of a lot of people's lives, I was determined, come hell or high water, to find a way to bring my father to justice. Not just for what he'd done to me, but for all the people he'd hurt over the years. That was a task so formidable, it was almost hard to see past it. To imagine a time when I wouldn't live in the shadow of fear, when I could reconcile the two halves of myself and be one person, in private and in public, when I could be Callie again. That time would come. And when it did, where would I go? Back to a life on the road? Living out of a couple of suitcases, in hotels and temporary apartments, dipping into people's lives for a short time only to leave again when I thought they were strong enough to stand on their own? Never staying in one place? No. I wasn't about to call Oliver and tell him I was making a change. It was too soon for that. But I already knew that life would never be enough. I wanted home. I wanted family and friends, a place to belong. And for the first time since my teens, it seemed like that life was within my reach. Had I found all that here in Bootleg Springs, with the sometimes surly and so damn sexy Gibson Bodine? I was almost afraid to hope that I had. We'd see where this led. We had a long road to travel before we were in the clear. Scarlett and Cassidy were playing a game of pool with Devlin and Bowie. At a glance, it looked like girls against boys. Jameson and Leah May were at a small table tucked in a corner nearby. George stood by the pool tables, watching with a beer dangling from his big hand, while June sat on a stool next to him, her nose in a book. Jonah had Shelby in his arms, swaying to a slow song. They were one of only two couples dancing, but they didn't seem to mind, or notice. I did a double take when I realized one member of the second couple was Jenny. She and Jimmy Bob Prosser looked adorably cozy. He had one of her hands tucked against his chest, and she smiled up at him. Gibson led me to a table on the outskirts of the bar, as if he'd scanned the room and chosen the least crowded spot. He probably had.
"You want a drink?"
he asked. "Apple pie moonshine."
"Part of the daydream?"
he asked. I nodded. "I've never had it before." He scowled.
"What kind of bootleg girl are you? We're fixing that."
I waited at our table while Gibson went to the bar. The bartender, Nicolette, if I wasn't mistaken, was a petite brunette with her hair in a ponytail and a no-nonsense look about her. Gibson rested an elbow on the bar and leaned across to give her our orders. Her eyes flicked to me for a few seconds, then back again, but she was too far away for me to read anything in her expression. A woman whose face seemed familiar came over to my table. She was slim, maybe in her 50s, wearing a plaid flannel shirt, cowboy boots, and a friendly smile. "Evening," she said, raising a half-full mason jar. "Just wanted to pop on over and say hi. I'm Fanny Sue." Of course, Fanny Sue Tomaszek. I remembered her from before. "Nice to meet you. I'm Maya." Her eyes tracked my face, just long enough for me to notice, but not quite long enough to be rude. And there was something in her expression. A wistfulness, maybe.
"I hear you work for a big record company."
"I do. Adelon Records. I'm a producer."
"Wow. Ain't that something else?" she said. "That make you happy?"
I blinked in surprise. I'd expected a question about why I was in bootleg, or maybe how I'd met Gibson.
"Oh, well, yeah, it does."
Her smile grew.
"That's wonderful to hear. So good to see you, Maya. I mean, meet you."
I watched her walk away, my lips parted, my heart suddenly pounding. Oh my God, did she know? Gibson came back with our drinks. He slid a mason jar with an inch or so of amber liquid toward me and sat on the other stool.
You all right?
He asked. I leaned across the table and lowered my voice. Fanny Sue Tomaszek just came over and said hello. I think she might know. His expression went stony, worry lines etching into his forehead.
You sure?
Not positive, but she said it was good to see me, then corrected herself to meet me.
She didn't come out and say it? Use your name?
I shook my head. No. Isn't she a deputy? Did Sheriff Tucker tell the department?
I don't think so. Not yet. But Fanny Sue's sharp. If anyone in this town was going to figure it out, it'd be her.
He looked in her direction for a second.
I don't think we need to worry. She's one of the good guys anyway.
With a deep breath, I released the tension in my shoulders. Gibson was probably right. There didn't seem to be any reason to panic. I took a sip of my drink, my first taste of real Bootleg Springs moonshine. It tasted exactly like apple pie, tart with a bit of cinnamon. It had a nice bite to it, warming my throat as it went down. Wow, I put the mason jar down. This is dangerous.
Yeah, you gotta sip it slow.
What are you drinking? I gestured to his jar.
Just water. I don't drink.
That was something I didn't know. Had alcohol been a problem for him, or was it simply a matter of taste? Can I ask if there's a reason? He looked away, and for a second I wondered if I shouldn't have asked.
Dad drank, so I don't.
I can understand that. I don't need to, if it makes you uncomfortable.
Nah,
he said, meeting my eyes again.
If it bothered me to watch people get shit-faced, I'd have to move to another town.
I tipped my mason jar, looking at its contents. Well, I don't plan on getting shit-faced, although I have a feeling this stuff would make it easy.
That is a fact. If you do, I'll get you home safe.
That made me smile, and a warmth that had nothing to do with the liquor spread through me. I knew he would get me home safe. I could drink myself into oblivion, leaving me completely vulnerable, and I'd wake up in his bed tomorrow, no harm done, save the wicked hangover I'd be nursing. I trusted him. Who else in this world did I trust like that? Almost no one. I took another sip. It was damn good. Thanks. A burst of laughter from near the pool tables carried over the music. Scarlett and Cassidy were cracking up at something. Devlin watched Scarlett, the end of his pool cue resting on the ground by his foot. Even from over here, I could see the adoration on his face. Bowie was looking at Cassidy with the same eyes. I glanced around the bar again, at Shelby and Jonah, who'd joined the others at the pool tables, standing close together like they didn't want to stop touching. At George and June, now the sole occupants of the dance floor, swaying to Tennessee whiskey. At Jameson, holding Liam A's hand over their table, idly twisting her engagement ring while they talked. They had a potential crisis on their hands. But I realized none of them were going to stop living. Watching Gibson's family, I saw smiles and laughter, good-natured shit-talking, kisses and soft touches. These people were spilling love all over the place. It made me want to tuck them into my pocket and keep them forever. And the notion that I could maybe one day be a part of this, really, truly a part of it, brought the sting of tears to my eyes. It also sent another fierce jolt of resolve pouring through me. I wasn't going to let my family ruin these people, no matter what it took. Gibson reached across the table and took my hand. He straightened my arm and traced his fingers over my tattoos. Across the subtle ridges on my wrist, up to my elbow on the inside of my arm.
This is why you always wore long sleeves, isn't it? why you were wearing a cardigan even though it was summer.
I nodded. I always did. I found lightweight ones so I didn't get too hot, and I suppose I was used to it.
His brow creased, and he kept caressing my arm. You even had one of those swimming shirts, didn't you? One with sleeves.
I glanced at his hand against my tattoos, thinking back. Somehow, with him touching me like this, I could draw on the memories without feeling like they'd drown me. Yeah, a rash guard. The one I had that summer was pink and blue, with bikini bottoms to match. I always left the house with shorts on so my parents wouldn't object to it. Even though it had sleeves, it was cropped pretty high, showed a lot of my midsection.
Why didn't we ever notice?
He asked.
Why didn't any of us wonder why you always wore long sleeves?
I slid my fingers along the back of his hand. I was very good at hiding my secrets. I'd started early, so it was second nature. I knew exactly how to behave to make it look like I was a normal girl, how to draw attention away from any little clues that might tip someone off. And people see what they expect to see most of the time. If my face didn't show my fear or pain, people didn't know to look for it.
I should have known.
No, you shouldn't have, I said. And, Gibbs, those days we spent in the woods meant more to me than I know how to say. You made me feel good and safe at a time when I needed that more than anything. His face lifted, his blue eyes meeting mine.
Oh my God.
What?
I didn't even think about it when you said your name. Maya Davis. Davis ain't your Blue Moon family's last name, is it?
I nibbled my bottom lip, feeling that little tug of sheepishness again. No. Theirs is Holly.
Davis is my middle name.
Yeah, I kind of borrowed it from you. A slow grin spread across his face, and he took my hands, bringing them to his lips.
You can keep it, although maybe someday.
He trailed off, but I knew what he was thinking. He didn't need to say it. Maybe someday he'd give me his last name, too. Right then and there, it happened. There was no stopping it now. I felt light, like I could float off this stool, filled with a heady euphoria. I wasn't getting tipsy from the moonshine, but I was drunk, all right. Drunk in love with Gibson Bodine.
Chapter 26. Gibson. The scars on Callie's arms weren't noticeable when you looked at her, not with those beautiful tattoos, but I could feel them beneath my fingertips, small ridges marring her otherwise smooth skin. They rekindled my anger at her father, but instead of giving in to it and probably taking it out on someone else, I turned away from the raging heat that burned in my gut. It was still there. That man needed justice, bootleg or otherwise, before I'd ever truly let it go. But tonight, I didn't want to simmer in rage like a pot threatening to boil over. I wanted to have a good night with my girl. Wanted it more than I wanted to be mad. And damn, she made it easy. That smile, those hazel eyes, so pretty and clear, her long wavy hair hung around her shoulders, a wild mix of blonde, purple, turquoise, and blue. Her flowy dress was a hippie sort of sexy, like she ought to be wearing a crown of flowers on her head. She had a thin gold ring on one index finger and a ring with a purple stone on another. It hit me like a punch to the face that she was here with me. This beautiful girl with a spine of steel and a survivor spirit was sitting across from me, looking into my eyes, smiling.
She'd borrowed my middle name, taken it with her when she'd left. Truth was, she'd taken more than that. She'd taken a piece of me. But instead of wishing for it back, all I wanted was to give her the rest. Suddenly, all those old country love songs I'd played so often made perfect sense. "Did that teenage daydream of yours happen to involve dancing?" I asked. Her eyes lit up.
"You dance?"
"I'm a man, ain't I?" I said, almost offended that she was surprised. "Every bootleg man worth his salt knows how to dance." I took her hand and led her to the open space we used as a dance floor. June and George were still there. Bowie and Cass had joined them. I slipped a hand around Callie's waist to the small of her back and pulled her close. Truth be told, my dancing skills were probably a bit rusty. I rarely used them, but for a slow song, it didn't matter. I knew how to lead, and that was the important part, and simply having Callie next to me, the excuse to touch her, was enough. The slow song ended, and it rolled into a new one, meant to be. It was a little more upbeat and too new for us to have